Adam Dmytryk, CEO of AdaptTech. So Adam, thanks for joining us. And can you tell me a little bit about what is a monolith?
Thanks, Drew. Glad to be on. Yeah, monolith is what is being referred to as software where coupling and cohesion have been managed incorrectly. So the symptom that I look for is a large multi-column table in a database usually is a low-hanging fruit to look for, such as a product table with a ton of columns for different concerns that everyone knows don't belong together, but just for convenience and the adage of saving space or not complicating things, you have them sitting together because the product table has everything that anyone needs to know about a product. And that tends to put things that don't belong together into one table, and that gives other architectural concerns a problem, such as transactional scope, that when you're locking that row for an update or something, other services can't get at it. But that is still a very superficial analysis. There's deeper concerns about keeping architectures clean.
That sort of description sounds to me like sort of an understanding, misunderstanding, or a put all things in one place, sort of a large table, maybe something that could result from scope creep or, you know, just trying to get things out the door quickly. Is that necessarily a reflection of architectural style, monolith versus microservice, or is that something that just seems to be, from experience, something you see time and time again with what we're calling monoliths?
There's many reasons why the monolith may arise, and it very well may be a startup that had high constraints in terms of the not just the money, but also the type of talent that was able to be hired, and just plain time constraints that adding yet another concern into that product table was the shortest answer to get something going. And in the interest of getting an MVP out the door, it was done that way. So there's always a lot of good intentions behind these things, but sometimes it's a really old model that has some history in traditional architecture. If you go back to the 80s and earlier, storing data was expensive, at least way more expensive than it is now. So having things normalized and kept together, generally you got a efficiency of scale for having all information in one database and one table.
So it sounds to me a little bit like, you know, a lot of the descriptive wording, I guess, nomenclature around monolith is coupling, cohesion, problematic sort of problems that you might see arise. Is there ever a good reason to have a monolith, or is monolith ever applied as a term to a good code base?
I personally don't think it is. I think having too many concerns in one place is like having a very messy room or something like that. It's just hard to get around and hard to watch for side effects. Other things like cyclomatic complexity go up dramatically as more logic needs to be put in to deal with all the side effects.
So having a single code base with clean code that's easy to work with, is that just simply not something that's possible or not something you typically see?
It's possible, but it's the price goes up to a point where it's impossible. So there's definitely room before you get to that point, but it's not an ideal way of working. So the amount of effort to keep something that has seven services lumped into one will probably be very expensive to maintain properly. And what happens traditionally is that it's not maintained properly. We simply don't have the time to deal with the side effects of our actions and the implications that cyclomatic complexity drives up.
Okay, so next question, what are microservices? And let's add to that, how do they solve the problems that you're talking about with monoliths?
Right, so microservices are at the opposite end of the spectrum, which should imply that there is no easy path or migration from a monolith to a microservice. You're looking at everything in between that doesn't belong is in between monolith and microservice. So microservices are the polar opposite of the monolith, where you do have a small subset of data and cyclomatic complexity is down, and you have one concern that you're dealing with, such as pricing for a product. So you would, in a proper microservice, you would be only storing pricing information about a product if your service is dealing with pricing. You wouldn't need the picture of the product or descriptions or other things. And you may have a product table in a whole bunch of microservices with varying overlap of data, but that's fine. The idea is that a microservice can be worked on and owned by a small team where they don't have a ton of code to deal with. They can deploy everything, and they can continue to be agile in delivering what, let's say, the product pricing service is supposed to do, i.e. if something goes wrong or there's changes in the way the pictures for products are being served up, this particular team that's dealing with pricing has nothing to do with that. On the surface, it may look like you could do that in a monolith, but the sad reality is, again, the coupling rears its ugly head, and things that are supposed, what would seem to be simple changes are no longer simple changes.
So do we see this really as the way of the future? Monolith, and then to microservices, and going forward to micro-monolith services?
This same problem that monoliths, in a startup came to exist because of constraints. Same thing can happen to an individual microservice where all of a sudden maybe your product pricing service has, because of whatever factors, has started to incorporate a bunch of non-pricing information into it and functionality. And this is where our diligence has to come in and say that we're not adding this to the pricing service. We need to make a separate service and deal with how we integrate the whole solution together. So microservices, again, just to finish the thought on microservices, don't query one another. So one of the typical problems with SOA or where microservices came from is that we looked at the technology stacks used to define what SOA is, and how do we do remote procedure call over HTTP, etc. That was initial.
So what's a problem? I think you mentioned it. What is a problem with using a technology stack to define an architectural pattern or architectural patterns?
It usually leaves behind the diligence needed to keep data separate, which is what will glue things together. For example, you could have multiple APIs for different parts of the product, such as pricing. However, if on the back end you have one database with one giant product table, these are not really services. They have the illusion of being microservices, but they're not. They have a well-organized API, but to get any work done is still going to be tricky in terms of dealing with the side effects.
So they're not, in that case, you're saying they're not services. Is that because of how much they rely on each other, or because of how many calls they have to make, or because they're coupled together to even be able to return meaningful data?
That's all right. That's what I was getting at, is microservices should be functional on their own. I think what we have in the industry right now is, as long as things are running in Docker, we're fine. But the next level of understanding for microservices is how autonomous they are. And in that comes PubSub versus querying for information. One of the key things with microservices is that they don't query one another for information. What we have is an ability to publish and get the information ahead of time into services that may depend on that information. So in the traditional example that you can see, it's kind of like light switches. If you turn off one service, do the other ones that rely on it, are they immediately offline, right? Or are they just happily going along with, maybe a little bit stale information? But that's fine. If it's within our SLAs, that's okay. So without that, we have remote procedure calls to do lookups from another service. If I turn off that service that's going to be used for that query, then I'm going to have an issue with that not being available. So again, there are ways to use technology to try and cache information for certain things, but I think that still leaves a lot to be a lot to be desired for how we want to deal with information and organizing data and behavior.
Okay, so let's say a business lead or a CEO, non-technical sort of lead management person, is talking with the CTO or technical lead, and they're having a discussion, and the idea comes up, and the technical lead says, "Hey, listen, we've got this monolith, and we're looking at moving into services, breaking out into microservices architecture. What's some advice you might have for this non-technical person looking at this to consider?"
Well, definitely it's something that comes up quite often, because it's very, very common to have this need to organize things as organizations have grown and they have a monolith that is very, you know, full of legacy code and other concerns that's making progress very difficult or is jeopardizing the quality of the total solution. People are and organizations are moving towards these autonomous services that can then be managed better. So this is something that we deal with at Adaptech quite often. Our sort of go-to method for that is to not extract a service from a monolith. It's sort of, I think Scott Beller gives an example of cutting a car in half to get two motorcycles. That just doesn't work. What we do, however, is we start to build services on the side, and we put Y valves at the top of where you start the interaction with the monolith, and we put in triggers into the database at the very bottom of the architectural diagram to publish or make the legacy code speak about what it's doing. From there, you get very coarse, ugly events that are being published, but at least you're getting images as to what's going on in the monolith. From there, you subscribe that into a new service as a set of lookup tables. You can then make new functionality in that new service, and you can divert some of the interactions from the monolith into that service via that Y valve at the top to say that, well, maybe pricing can be done in this new service. And so any information interaction there, maybe admin, etc., can be done via this new service. That also goes to another direction as well sometimes, where it's too hard to get the change done in the monolith that you want, and it's just easier to change the table underneath. That's a tough one to do and requires a lot of discipline. So generally what we do is guide a client through how to make sure that that's done properly. And again that's doing the Y valve at the top properly, and also sourcing and translating the events from the database at the very bottom. Maybe some...
So you said this Y valve at the top a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Could you explain a little bit more about what that means and how, particularly as a non-technical lead in a business side, just kind of having a conversation maybe over a coffee with the technical lead and kind of talking about this services versus monolith, what would be this Y valve and why?
Okay, so let's say that this pricing administration screen is a new feature, and this established company has hundreds of clients already that are using the service as is. And we want to add some administrative functionality for the pricing. And what we would do in the Y valve at the top is we'd say, well, the new customer that requested that, if the customer ID is such and such, go ahead and skip the entire monolith and go call out to the service instead. And any information that's already in there has been published via looking at the existing tables and skipping all of the complex code in between. So it's essentially allowing you to freeze your legacy so that you continue to, what we refer to as continuing to reap the benefits and the investment, the legacy investment. So we don't like to use technical debt or negative terms, because that legacy code, that monolith, is giving you value. If it wasn't giving you value, you'd have turned it off long ago and started anew. So legacy investment is how we term that, and we need to make sure that we can still get information from it that still runs as smoothly as possible while it has to run. A lot of that is basically is saying that you will not continue to add code to this to make it even worse. And how you do that is with these Y valves at the top and these publishers at the very bottom. And, you know, typically we start at the database, but some legacy code may be still not as bad at the data access layer, where you can intercept that even before it hits the database to make a publish of information that's going to get stored. But generally, the default the catch-all is the database itself, with a trigger that is listening for updates, deletes, and inserts.
So it sounds to me like you're saying some of the best advice that you would want to give someone is, are you making sure to properly leverage your existing code base?
Absolutely.
And to put things in place so that you're using that when it makes sense to use that, but going forward, the things that you are changing are being put into different services that are being used differently, while not completely ignoring that there is this legacy investment, as you called it, into the code base that's currently there, that is currently providing.
As with anything, extremes are bad. And continuing on with the monolith, introducing better practices is really no way out. The approach is flawed already. And likewise, on the extreme, the nice to have is already to be in a world of microservices and have everything separated nicely. But that requires a rewrite, which would mean stopping, you know, attending to your business and your customers immediately, taking a 3 year or 2 years or whatever it is to rewrite everything from scratch. And both are not very, while possible, not ideal for, especially from the business perspective. So the answer, as with anything, is somewhere in the middle of two extremes. And what we do is we give a better way of dealing with that and hold the customer, both from the business side and the technical side, through the process to moving into the microservice world in a logical, well thought out way, with the pros and cons weighed at each point. A lot of this is obviously introducing new technical concepts, but also introducing new concepts for project management and other business side facing concerns.
Adam Dimitrik of Adaptex Solutions, thank you very much for joining us. Now, if people want to reach out to you or to Adaptex, I know you have the weekly DDD CQRS ES practitioners meetup, usually in Gastown at the Tribe in Vancouver. But what about for people online who'd like to reach out? What's the best way to do so?
Oh, thanks, Drew. Absolutely. Online, we're easily found at adaptexsolutions.net. I am on Twitter, of course, which I frequent.
Barely.
Yeah, it's A Dimitrik.
Be careful if you're going to subscribe.
Yeah, A Dimitrik. Yeah, it's A Dimitrik on Twitter. Also, if you like looking at these things in CQRS and event sourcing, searching for CQRS on Twitter will usually get you to, you know, conversations that I'm involved in and others as well. And also,
here's another question. Sure. I have for you, Adam, while I've got you. I know you speak very highly of Greg Young. What are some people, if I'm interested in learning more about best practices with code in general, or architecture, microservice architecture, how to architect and design my system well, what's some suggested sort of people, influencers, reading material?
Right. So just for background, Greg Young is a person that came up with CQRS and is kind of and event sourcing as well. It's the backbone of strongly architected microservices. They haven't found a better way to write them so far. He was in Vancouver in 2008. And to find some of his talks, the two best talks I have from him would be 8 Lines of Code and another talk called Assert That We Understand. So both of those talks are very, very good and will give a good base understanding of all of this, even to non-technical people. Greg has a good way of using these new, I don't think they're new ways of doing things, but he has a good way of gluing the business concerns with the technical solutions. And I think that's what we're all after. Certainly, it's the only thing that we do at Adaptex, following him, his advice, and he's been an advisor from the beginning to our company. So, yeah, definitely those two talks from Greg are excellent. There's also a CQRS ES Slack channel that's international. I'm on there, as is Greg and others. So I would highly recommend people get to that. And I think it's the regular Heroku link with DDD-CQRS-ES in front of it. So I'm hoping that maybe Drew, you'll put this in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's also, we've got that shared across, I think, a couple of other Slack channels now as well, including Scott and Nathan's Eventide project. They have a DDD-CQRS-ES channel that's linked.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, if you look at that, but definitely Googling Greg Young or finding him on YouTube. I think he's got one of the talks, unfortunately, I don't think is on YouTube. I think it's on InfoQ or Skills Matter, one of those. But they're certainly, you can certainly find them quite easily. But if you have any issues finding information, feel free to contact me. Again, it's adaptixsolutions.net or my Twitter. At Adimitric.
Adam Dimitric, thank you very much for joining
us. Thanks, Drew.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes, much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.